Thanks for the invitation. Let me ask you a couple questions. And by you, I mean both summit attendees and speakers. Have you ever had a transaction or payment refused by your bank? Have you ever had a post, message, or video censored by a platform? I suspect for the majority of you, the answer is yes. They're not the same thing, but they're both manifestations of the same trend, that of overreach by both government and privately owned institutions, executed through technology in a fundamentally surveillance-based paradigm. If you aren't paying for the product, you are the product. I think we can all agree that a key pillar of freedom is the ability to spend, buy, transact, move money without governments or financial institutions controlling your ability to. Before I get into the meat of my talk, you might be wondering who I am and why I'm so hung up on truth, freedom, and privacy. My name is Max Freeman. I grew up in Silicon Valley and was lucky enough to be selected for Stanford University. A great place, but I never finished my degree and left because I was making money with my online business selling printer ink online in the days before eBay and Amazon. And that's what led me down this road. One day in 2016, I woke up to find all the money in my business frozen and all of my printer cartridge stock had been seized by a government agency. What was my crime? Daring to compete with a large multinational that was an insider. To cut a very long, painful, and expensive story short, I was found to be completely innocent of any alleged crimes. I thought I'd won and everything would go back to normal. I'd get my stock and my money back, but I was severely mistaken. My inventory ended up with competition. My money ended up funding the government agency. They put a metaphorical gun to my head and told me, "Sue me if you want. We have all the time in the world and there's nothing you can do to force us to give it back." As you can imagine, this changed my worldview somewhat. But apart from our own personal experiences of censorship, we're seeing more and more reports of financial control and overreach in the media too. What does a supporter do when they can't send donations without being put on a terrorist watch list and are subsequently debanked? Remember the Canadian truckers? What does a supporter do when PayPal fines them $2,500 for spreading truth that has been reclassified as misinformation by the powers that be? What does someone in Russia do when their access to international financial services is suddenly shut off because their country goes to war through no fault of their own? These are all examples today of censorship in the financial markets. But if you're not yet being censored, you are definitely a victim of the fiat, debt, inflation-based money system that is in use throughout the world today. What do I mean by that? Well, despite the huge technological advances of the past 20, 30 years, as a rule, we're less well off than our parents were. So why is that? It's because we have a fiat debt-based economic system that's designed to keep us poor and concentrates wealth ever upwards. While there are many ways how this system works, here are four key levers that are used to keep us in our places. Inflation. One of the main criticisms of the fiat-based system is that it leads to inflation. Fiat currency is not backed by any physical commodity, which means that governments or central bankers can print as much of it as they want, which leads to a decrease in the currency's value over time. The Fed has increased its M1 money supply from $4 trillion in February 2020 to a massive $20 trillion today. People my age hear stories about how bad inflation was in the 1970s, but based on actual numbers, by many unmassaged figures, inflation today is higher than it was when Jimmy Carter was in power. So, what does all this mean for us? If the supply of money goes up, but the amount of goods and services stayed the same, we have more money competing for the same products and services. It's no wonder everything is so expensive now. We are the ones who suffer. This was an interesting clip from Kristalina Georgieva, who is director of the International Monetary Fund.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences. We take decisions with an objective in mind and rarely think through what may happen that is not our objective. And then we wrestle with the impact of it. Any decision that is a massive decision, like the decision that we need to spend to support the economy, you know, at that time we did recognize that may lead to too much money in circulation, too few goods. but didn't really quite think through the consequence in a way that upfront would have informed better what we do. And the fact that we are, I'm sorry I'm going on here, but I'll finish in a second. We act sometimes like 8 years old playing soccer. Here is the ball, we are all at the ball, and we don't cover the rest of the field.
An admission that they're not as smart as they think they are. If the argument is, well, sorry, we didn't see this coming, when there are armies of people like me who, in comparison, are playing 3D chess and did see it coming, then there is no excuse. In fact, it's pretty outrageous. Moving on. Centralization. Another criticism is that the fiat debt-based monetary system is highly centralized. Central banks have a significant amount of control over the money supply, interest rates, and other key economic factors. This can lead to market distortions and favoritism towards certain groups or industries. China has been a major player in artificially keeping the value of their currency low by buying billions of US dollar bonds over the past 30 years, making their exports seem attractive to foreign buyers. What does that mean for us? With centralization comes the ability for the elite to make decisions on our behalf. It's not just elected officials that make these decisions. Many important monetary decisions are made in the US by the Federal Reserve, which is a privately held for-profit corporation run as a business to produce profit for its shareholders, not do what's best for the country itself or its people. More often than not, these decisions are dressed up as one thing, but in reality, they're another. Or as we saw with inflation, sometimes even unintended consequences. But whatever the reason, they usually benefit insiders. We are the ones that suffer. Financial instability. The fiat debt-based system can also be criticized for its tendency to create financial instability. Since banks create money out of thin air through loans and other financial instruments, there is a risk of bubbles and crises if these loans are not properly managed. We just have to look at what happened in 2008 to see an example of this. You'd have thought they'd have learned their lessons, but bankers will be bankers, and greed is good, and we're experiencing all sorts of these bubbles again today. What does that mean for us? The simplest way to look at this is to ask who benefits from boom and bust cycles. In theory, everyone benefits from the boom and everyone suffers in a bust, right? Wrong. When things go wrong, when cycles downturn, it's the people with money and power who benefit. Most people think you make the big money by selling at the right time, but it's almost impossible to know when that is. Smart money makes money by buying at the right time. They wait until assets are on fire sale. Right now, there are trillions of dollars sitting on the sidelines waiting for the next fire sale to happen. They know it's coming, it's just a matter of time. When it does, you'll see all sorts of great businesses and assets being picked up for cents on the dollar, while the entrepreneurs who built these businesses will be left with little to nothing. But that's just capitalism, right? Well, yes and no. The people buying these businesses aren't evil. They're just making the most of the opportunity in front of them. What I'm saying is that this boom and bust cycle that causes this opportunity to happen doesn't have to be this way. Whatever happens because of financial instability, we are the ones who suffer. Inequality. The fiat-based system has also been criticized for contributing to economic inequality. The wealthy and powerful have more access to information, credit, and other financial instruments, which exacerbate income and wealth disparities. This is great if you're already rich, not so great if you're not. So what does that mean for us? Simply that the game is rigged against us. It's like playing poker with someone who knows what hand you hold. 9 times out of 10, they're going to win, but they're going to leave you just enough hope that you can win, so you keep on playing. Think about the financial market deregulation in the 1990s. It was supposed to open up the currency and stock markets to retail traders and give us the same opportunities as hedge funds and investment banks. But remember, trading is a zero-sum game. For every winner, there has to be a loser on the other side of the trade. The truth is, because of this information asymmetry, retail traders are just another source of alpha for the pros. More dumb money for the smart money to make more from. It's that simple. Like I said, it's a rigged game of poker. We are the ones who suffer. All four of these features of the current system are amplified by the fact that there's a severe lack of economic understanding in the world. Now, that's not surprising because some of it's pretty hard to get your head around. Even the experts disagree on most things. This makes it easier to push the doctrine that we've all grown up to accept without question, which is the boom and bust cycle is inevitable and you can't have economic growth without inflation. So are we simply to accept that debt-based finance enslaves us and that inflation makes us poorer? But Bitcoin, I can hear you all thinking. We'll come back to that in a minute. But before we do, Bitcoin has opened up the Pandora's box of central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs. Governments and central banks are taking all that is good with digital currencies, throwing it out and taking all that is bad with digital currencies and amplifying it. If you thought the current financial system was corrupt and controlling, CBDCs are the stuff of nightmares. If we simply measure them on the four criticisms of the fiat system, inflation, centralization, financial instability, and inequality, they do nothing to fix these problems. What's more, you get a whole load more bad stuff straight out of the box. China is one of the first governments to trial CBDCs, and as ever, they're showing us a glimpse of our dystopian future if we don't do something about it. Here's a few of the nastier ones. Conditional payments. Funds are only released if certain conditions are met. For example, the government can use this feature to distribute welfare payments or stimulus funds, but only if the recipient agrees to certain conditions, such as attending a specific job training program, political re-education, or agreeing to receive an experimental medical procedure. Negative interest rates. With CBDCs, it's possible to implement negative interest rates where account balances decrease over time instead of earning interest. This incentivizes spending and discourages saving, which can be used to stimulate the economy or control inflation. However, it can also be used to punish or discourage behavior that the government disapproves of. Expiry date. Money that can't be used past a certain date must be spent, meaning you can no longer save for a rainy day. Traceability and surveillance. Traceability and surveillance of transactions can arguably be used for legitimate purposes, such as preventing money laundering or terrorism financing, but can also be used for more nefarious purposes, such as political repression, social control, or simply maximizing tax revenue. Blacklisting and freezing of funds. Smart contracts can be used to blacklist certain individuals or organizations from receiving funds or to freeze funds in the event of suspected illegal activity. While this can be used to prevent criminal activity, it is also used to stifle dissent and target political opponents, as we recently saw in the case of Canada with the trucking protesters and their financial supporters who were pursued under emergency powers legislation as financial terrorists. This is a true story. Of course, we won't be sold these features. We'll be told about the convenience and ease of use of CBDCs. But the truth is, if they can, eventually they will. So, what's the alternative? If you're to believe the laser-eyed bloviators on Twitter, then the answer to life, the universe, and everything is Bitcoin. But the reality is that while the vision for Bitcoin was originally perfect, the Satoshi implementation is deeply flawed in many ways. I'm not going to stand here and dismantle all the elements of BTC because I need a lot more time than we have. But if we just take the one feature that probably concerns us in this room the most, it's censorship resistance. The original Bitcoin Core software is a transparent blockchain that uses pseudonymous addresses. With a little bit of chain analysis, and yes, there are companies that sell this ability, it's very easy to tie a blockchain transaction and address to a person or entity. So if the coins have been used for a nefarious purpose at some point, they become tainted and may not be accepted when you try to spend them. If you hold them on an exchange that operates in a G20 economy, then those coins can be easily confiscated. Did you know that almost 10 million Bitcoin, almost 50% or over 50% of supply, went through the Silk Road website? For those that don't know, the Silk Road was an illegal underground marketplace where drugs and guns and other illegal things were traded. So if you're holding Bitcoin, there's a 50% chance you're holding tainted coins. You could, of course, hold it in your own cold wallet, so it becomes technically unconfiscatable, but it also becomes unspendable or unexchangeable. You're essentially stuck with a valueless NFT. You might as well have gone out and bought a monkey JPEG. We're all concerned about our lack of privacy online. Who's tracking whom? Who's selling what data about you to whom? I'd imagine most of you use browsers like Brave and search engines like DuckDuckGo. And these are the basics, and that's a good start. But privacy is also a key component of sovereign money, too, because without privacy, you can't have fungibility. Fungibility is one of those words you hear a lot about, but sometimes don't know what it means. It simply means that one thing can be swapped for the other, completely interchangeable. BTC coins aren't fungible because of the tainted coins issue we just mentioned. Without fungibility, it can't be money in the true sense of the word. Don't believe me? Here's Adam Back, a core Bitcoin developer from Blockstream, talking about fungibility and how it relates to the Silk Road.
And yet this kind of effect that people multiple hops removed from you who are sending you Bitcoins, if they are associated with some trade on Silk Road or something like that, it turns out that some of the exchanges and hosted wallets are using sort of chain tracing services and up to four hops deep away from you, if something is associated with the Silk Road, they will freeze your account and ask you to take your funds and your custom elsewhere. So that, you know, if you look at it from this perspective, the reality is that for people using those services, fungibility in Bitcoin is actually worse than PayPal, because other people's actions, which have got nothing to do with you, and you have essentially potentially no connection whatsoever with, four hops away is a very long way away. I dare say, you know, potentially just about anybody with Bitcoins in their wallet who have done a few trades are within four hops of, you know, anybody in the Bitcoin ecosystem potentially. It's a very interconnected system, like the kind of social networking theory that you're 13 hops from anybody globally. In a Bitcoin network, it's a smaller collection of wallets.
Pretty scary, huh? And he's considered one of the godfathers of Bitcoin. There's even some speculation that he's Satoshi himself, although I'm not sure that I believe that. But it's not just privacy and fungibility that matter. There's a whole host of other things that are key to censorship-resistant money. So what are they? We went through an exercise where we looked at everything that's been done before, right the way back from the creation of tally sticks all the way to the most recent fiat currencies, and everything we've learned from all the brilliant attempts to build unconfiscatable cryptocurrencies in the last 14 years. We took all the best ideas and distilled them down to a list of 28 essential features, and here they are. It's a bit small to read. I'll read out a few of them that are pertinent to us. Private by default, decentralized, fungible, surveillance resistant, politically resistant, censorship resistant, confiscation resistant. To be perfect, unconfiscatable money for people who really value their freedom, money needs to tick all 28 of these boxes. Epic does. That's why I go by Max Freeman. It stands for Maximum Freedom for Mankind. And that's why we built Epic Cash. It's the first step in building a money system that's free from tyranny and free for everyone to use without needing to look over their shoulders, without fear of being canceled, censored, or retaliated against. Epic ticks all these boxes. If you wanted a one-line summary for Epic Cash, it's what Satoshi would build today if he were building Bitcoin using today's technology and all the lessons learned over the past 15 years. Like Bitcoin, Epic is a community-driven project. There's no corporation. We're all volunteers who believe in financial freedom. Currently, we have about 300 contributors from around the world. If you'd like to join us and help us on our mission or simply buy some coins, we're a warm, welcoming bunch. We have big plans, and with your help, we'd love to reach more people and get there faster. Epic is an open, borderless, neutral, permissionless peer-to-peer payment network that allows people to pay anyone, anywhere, anytime, any amount, for any reason, privately, and nobody can stop them from doing so. More importantly, it's the first building block and cornerstone of a new financial system that's free from the mistakes of the past. Let's look at the four key challenges we identified earlier and how Epic solves these. Inflation. We really can have inflation-free money. Epic has a final fixed supply of only 21 million coins with an emission curve that catches up with and matches Bitcoin by 2028. No more money printer go brr. Instead of having money that decreases in value over time, we have money that in theory increases in value over time as the demand for good money increases. I really think that the introduction of CBDCs will be the catalyst for this, so people that get in early to defensive cryptos will be ahead of the crowd and are going to do very well for themselves. Centralization. The financial system really can be decentralized and beyond the control of governments and corporations. The Epic blockchain is compact and designed to fit on a smartphone at only 5 gigabytes. One day, there will be billions of Epic nodes all over the world, making it truly unstoppable and uncontrollable. Financial instability. Yes, we can have financial stability. Rather than having financial bubbles created by banks that issue loans out of thin air, in the near future with Epic, you'll be able to issue yourself a loan. Imagine that. The bank of me. Finally, inequality. Because it's free, open source software that can be run on a smartphone, Epic can be used anywhere in the world. Now, unbanked continents like Africa will be able to join the global economic community and enjoy all the same benefits that we do. true equality of access to opportunity. So, if you're facing censorship, cancel culture, or third parties who are interfering with your ability to write, speak, think freely, and earn a living, if you want to be able to transact with anyone on your own terms so you can express yourself without fear of restriction, consider checking out our website at epic.tech. To claim your 5 free Epic Cash Coins, simply go to the Telegram group you see on the screen and follow the instructions in the pinned messages within that group. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Thanks for listening.